Welcome to CMO Convo, the podcast where we deep dive into the minds of chief marketing officers from across the globe. Every week, we bring you candid conversations with top CMOs who share their experiences, strategies, and insights into the ever-evolving world of marketing leadership.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, Michal, super excited to be here. It's a Friday, so let's get a ball rolling.
Cool. So first of all, thank you very much for being a guest of the podcast. And before we jump into our topic, which is the evolving role of the CMO, I would love to, if you can share a bit of information about yourself, your background.
Yeah, sure. So maybe at a high level, I'm a managing partner of B2B Practitioners, which is a go-to-market advisory in Central Europe, mainly out of Germany. So I'm based in Munich. My partner is based in Berlin, but I'm also, as you can see, associated with Finvey, which is a Munich-based fintech where I'm the CEO, mainly actually because of my competences on the marketing side. So that's actually probably an interesting part of the conversation that we can kick off. A bit more about myself, I consider myself one of the gray-haired people in the industry. So I've been around since the time of the dot-com bubble. So I've gone through a lot of the waves. I was always in B2B tech, but I started off in finance and operations, transitioned at some point into marketing, did the revenue operations and strategy, and ended up more on the strategic product marketing side and go-to-market strategy. So I would say I can talk to a lot of the marketing fields.
Cool. So that's quite a journey. So probably you have a lot of wisdom to share here. Would you mind sharing what is even like a CMO in your eyes? So how has it like kind of like evolved in the recent years and what's driving that change?
Yeah, that's such a tough question. For me, the CMO is probably the person the closest to the market and the customer. I'm not saying about the customers that we have right now, but the audience that is out there. So the CMO needs to inform the discussion at a strategic level. I love this term, team number one. So it has nothing to do with marketing. It's the people who run the company. And he needs to be the one who infuses the perspective, the insights of the markets, of the competition, of what's going on, and basically inform the strategic direction of the company. That's probably the foremost important role of a CMO.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that it's more about also understanding the market and being close to the customers and the audience, right?
Exactly. I think there's no one else in a better position to actually understand the customers, to bring in the wisdom, what's going on in the market. Are there new trends? How is the competition evolving? I use often this 3C model. So company/product, if it's a single product company, competition and customer. And that's exactly where the CMO needs to operate and navigate, need to inform corporate strategy, but obviously needs to also be able to translate it into priorities for their own team.
So may I ask a question, like something, a topic that is a recurring topic when I interview, you know, other guests in the podcast is the need of the balance between strategic and execution. And I think that that's a shift that we are now seeing in the market in kind of like the evolving of marketing leaders and CMOs. Do you have any take on that, about that need between being a strategic visionary marketing leader, but then also managing the execution?
Yeah, that's actually close to my heart. What I see is there's almost like a chasm between the PM marketing leaders who are strategic and the more operational people. And that makes it difficult for the companies to actually who should they hire, but also puts a lot of stress on the CMO themselves. So there's hardly or there's barely any of those people that can actually safely navigate the strategic scope and then can also be hands-on. When I say hands-on, doesn't mean to organize also an event, but it could be, but it's more like being talking at an executional level with the people. So being really versatile and shifting. Why is this currently so important? I think maybe let's rewind a bit and think about the last 25 years of my career. In the beginning, right after the dot-com bubble, cash was super, super scarce. You couldn't afford a big team. In fact, my first company that I'm really proud of was S-Box, was one of the primary exits in the Swiss IT industry in the late 2000s. But in the beginning, when we the company never really had cash, they had one CMO, and the CMO, he needed to be strategic, and at the same time being able to actually execute these priorities. So if I think in such a situation, cash strap, what do you need? You need someone who can strategically say, you don't want to hire this very junior person that in the end isn't able to drive this. Then you have, you need to be able to digest the numbers. You need to still have a vision of where you want to go. Particularly in the small setups, people will put a lot, will veer a lot more towards, hey, can we get demand generation or revenue marketing going on? Ideally, this person has also seen already a lot of things so they can actually easily and comfortably juggle and assess what's the right approach. Later on in my career, I was at Google, and in such a setting, there's no problem with cash. You basically have to really think about, you get trained actually in organizations like Microsoft, Google, Meta, so to be the really strategic thinker, delegate what is necessary to agencies, no matter what it costs. Think a lot of the people today who have mainly the strategic knowledge, they came through this for this career, but it's a different point of time when you have a ironic organization that has enough cash that doesn't really look at the resources. If you then dial forward a bit, particularly, I would say during the COVID period, or let's say the late 2010s or early 2020s, cash was a flush. What was important there? Mainly people who know how to build strategically build a brand, because brand drives demand. So it was all about the demand creation rather than the demand capture. People who, I would say, the blitzscalers were in demand because they needed to build be quick, build a team, and so on. So it was less about being able to to execute yourself. It was more like, is Michal or Norman the right person? Can he get the stuff done? How do I give him the resources to be able to do this? Now, think about where we are today. I would argue we're almost back, with a few exceptions, to the post dot-com bubble.
It really sounds like it, as if like there's a full circle, right?
That's my argument. Just for every economic situation, for every situation in the company, there's a different type of skills that you need. But by and large, part of the problem by a lot of my friends who maybe come more from the brand side, they're currently a bit disadvantaged in the job market because they can't talk as much to the numbers. They can't talk as much how to get things done. And if you're, let's say, if you're used to always delegating stuff to the agencies and suddenly you don't have a budget anymore, you're also in trouble. And I would say, just to add another observation, as also, I think the IT CMO today needs to have seen multiple playbooks and might be and should be able to create own playbooks. I've seen it too often that people jump from create business. Oh, I've been with Miro, or I've been with Flixbus, I've been with Personi, or so on, to stick to some of the German companies. That they just try to copy paste their existing playbook and are inflexible in adjusting it to new situations. So I think at the very least, the CMO today should have gone through multiple of those playbooks and know when they are out of their comfort zone, when they need to tap into their network. Sorry, this was a long discourse.
No, 100% agree. And I love your input. So do you have any like tips, right? Like what is the ideal balance? Let's say now I'm an emerging marketing leader, or this is, you know, like, first time even a CMO. How do I kind of like navigate between being this high level strategic thinker, but then the execution? I mean, to a certain extent, it sounds as if this profile is a bit rare. I mean, most of the people are either in the strategic or the execution. How do you kind of like close or bridge the gap in this current?
So I don't think I have cracked the code. If I look at, obviously, no matter what you do, you look at everyone else, and you know always 20 people who have done have had a much more amazing career. But let's break this down into two phases. The first part of the question is, how do I get there? And I think that's for me a curiosity. So curiosity means for me, every couple of years, you want to do something new. So not like a junior marketer who after 6 months thinks he's seen everything in that channel and move on to the next thing. But I think there's a preserve early on your curiosity. Learn as much as possible. If I look at my career, and if I just stay in marketing because it's the same, I've done demand generation early on. At some point, I've done content marketing. At some point, I built brand marketing experience and then product marketing. So the more you learn, I think that's a very, very solid basis. And it's don't learn it from the books, learn it from projects, because a lot of it, it's more art. You need to know how to do it, and you need to do it well, as opposed to learning the scientific background. Well, that gives you the frame, but not how to execute on it. Once you have this, you actually have a very strong foundation to always speak eye to eye to the people who in the future will work with you. The strategic mindset, I really believe you need strong mentor or the right organization. So I think there's a point to be made that you learn a lot more in companies like Google or so, if you were there at the right time in a career, because they force you to really think about, okay, what do you learn? What did you learn about markets? How do you translate these learnings into insights, and what is the consequence? So that may be from the learning side. So now, what does this mean for someone who starts into their career as a VP marketing or head of marketing, even or a CMO? I believe it's super important to reserve a base percentage of your time to think about strategy. It's easy to get sucked, particularly in those days where you have only three people in a company and there's everything. It's easy to get sucked into this operational doing and to lose the scope. And that's when your career veers off, because you want to get a lot of things done to make your managers happy, but you actually lose the track yourself. So I would say please reserve those 25% at the very least. However, you need to then be able to go back to your team and say, hey, we translated this way, and here is how what I think is good. How would you do it? But at least you have a fruitful discussion in order to be able to do the translation. You need to be the player coach almost in a smaller, and I'm talking about smaller companies where you say, here's the strategy, we do it for this reason, let's all do this. And I'm also pulling my weight. I'm not just sitting in the ivory tower or in this nice office and think all the time how it should be. That said, I'm crediting a friend of mine, the head of marketing from Interpretify for it, so Sven. He said, what it actually needs is you need to have the confidence that you're right. So often you get at a particular at a C-level a lot of fire. Is this the right strategy? Oh, you should do this, and we need revenue, so please change your strategy. So you need the confidence. You need the resilience to be able to actually deal with it, and you need to be able to also deliver expectation management, both for your team as well as for the organization, team number one. You will often sit in a room and they say, yeah, but our plan says this, and then you have to think about it's how to show goodwill but still push back that certain things are not realistic.
100% agree. You mentioned a phrase that is the first time that I'm actually hearing, and I like it. Like the CMO coach, I think that's what you refer, player coach. Would you mind sharing a bit about what does that actually mean?
Comes actually more, I would say, from the sales side. That's where I hear it often. Player coach is, it's not the VP sales that just looks at the numbers, that allocates resources. It's more a person that is still active, sells and goes out into the field with their sales stuff. I think something similar is necessary in smaller marketing organizations, and that's probably quite important. I'm not talking about an organization with 50, 60 marketers. There's a place again for the strategic market, but if I look at most of the organizations right now in the SaaS world, up to 20 million, you don't have those big businesses. You don't have these big teams. And in order to keep people motivated, they actually either you hire someone senior who you give a lot of leeway, but then you might run into the thing, how do you hire someone senior when there's only one people beneath them, or they work alone as the head of brand? What people really appreciate is if you share with them your strategic thoughts and how you look at it, but how you can also help them think about best practice in realizing projects. That could be pulling in the right people, connecting with the right people, or with your own hands-on knowledge. Obviously, you shouldn't micromanage, but you can at least tell him, here's how I think about it. I have this concept that how the user persona should look like, or the buyer persona. Why are we delivering this messaging? Does this actually make sense? So for me, a player coach is someone who sits in the project. He doesn't own the project, but they help to edit the project so it gets better. Don't take away the ownership. That would be bad.
Yeah. No, 100%. So maybe it's more kind of like asking the right questions, asking powerful questions that will help the team also develop or spark their imagination in a way. So I think that like...
Sometimes can also be, like I said, I'm currently the CEO at Finvi. I would sit down with a product marketer and we would write the messaging together. That's after all what I do or what I've done in my career. So really think about what are the value pillars, what are the differentiators, how can we best translate it, what is the right language market fit. So just if you don't put it too far so that it gets negative, it actually motivates the team because they learn a lot more and they feel like they're accelerating and it improves the motivation in the team. Plus, as a marketing leader, you get a lot more respect because it's much, much easier. So maybe we're binding a bit back when I was still in finance. My manager once came to me and he said, oh, please explain me what's so difficult about this. I knew he couldn't solve it either because it was basically a pure gamble that an outcome would happen or not. But he basically framed as a coach, oh, explain me how difficult. And I think that's obviously demotivating. If you have something like this, then basically, oh, here's a way how I would think about it. What is your opinion? And you come up with a better solution. But at least you are helpful as a manager because you are able to execute it. If I look at the React where I worked last year on a project, if there's no one who can done, people appreciate it if you show them, hey, I'm sitting down myself and I do it. And I can still do it. I might not be the best event marketer in the world anymore. I might not be the best ads marketer in the world anymore, but I prove I have some knowledge that gets us to good enough. The other advantage of being an operational leader, if you're just a person that has always been done strategy, how can you actually assess what great looks like except from the conversations with your buddies? But how do you tell someone, oh, the best practice in events is this, the best practice in ads is this, or in account-based marketing?
So if I reframe that, basically you need to live and breathe as if you are part of the team. So you are handling the workload as well, and not kind of like just sitting here and delegating, overseeing, etc. You are part of it. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's probably the new profile. It's not except for the very big organization, it's super important that you can show an impact at all levels. It creates a much stronger bondage with the team. But for most companies, it also emphasizes, oh, we are getting a payoff. So I have to go backward to my time when I worked in Berlin. So 2018, after I came back from the US, I've seen a lot of those ivory tower CMOs, and particularly in startups, that doesn't work out, or scale-ups. You can't have, let's say, on top of 5 or 10, even 10 people, sitting one person that only does the thinking.
Yeah, 100%. I want to move to the next topic, and it's, the economic downturn that we're currently experiencing. I think that it started, I don't even know, maybe 2023, but definitely we're still feeling that in 2025. So there's a lot of kind of like uncertainty, I think, in different companies and different marketing teams. Do you have any ideas about type of strategies that might help marketeers still to thrive, even then there is like very limited budget?
Yeah, so let's first, my first inclination when you asked the question was how to thrive. So I think it's really super important to be resilient in the marketing. It's a tough time. I know so many people who struggle to find a job, and we have to recognize this. I was lucky enough during the great financial crisis, I was with Google, and Google didn't fire back then. So, but I completely understand it's a tough situation. People are looking for a new job. For new jobs, you may have to take cuts. And to be honest, I've seen this. Roles that used to be a VP role for 160, 180,000 euros, suddenly 120,000, don't want to give you the title or whatever. So you really have to deal with this. Now, if I look at the role of the CMO, first of all, they need to obviously motivate the people, and they also have to, some constraints. Do you hire someone or do you do it yourself? I think the important focus is really to focus on the deliverables. What is the company on the hook for? We have to watch out as a CMO that we don't get veered or sucked into the quarterly target achievement of sales. But in the end, we are part of the revenue organization, so we need to be on the hook for revenue. So if I look now at the resource allocation, it's really important to just choose the one, two, or three battles that will move the needle. And while you have to think about what is the opportunity for what's needed for a long-term battle, you have to always make sure that 50 or 60% of your attention is on driving the revenue. Right now, I'm having similar discussions right now with Finlay. You need to make sure that the things that you build for a long run are still needed. Mm-hmm. That's basically counterbalanced by the short term, but it certainly depends on the organization.
So that leads me actually to the next question that I had in mind. So there is a growing pressure on short-term revenue impact now, especially in this economic landscape. How would you advise to create some sort of balance between this, you know, like short-term expectation to the long-term? I mean, should we then, as CMOs or marketers, maybe not focus on brand creation at the moment? Should we focus more on lead generation? I mean, how do we navigate that? Because it is a challenge, I think, that a lot of marketers are now facing.
Yeah, so I don't know anymore who took credit for it, but there was a nice post on LinkedIn a while ago. If all marketing is reduced to demand generation, you don't need marketing anymore. You can hire your demand generator in sales. Then a while ago, I had a good conversation with Adam Zimmern, who's a West Coast-based startup advisor, and he has this strong opinion that marketing should never report into the chief revenue officer. And I agree with this. Marketing should be on a hook for revenue. But if you roll marketing into sales or into the CRO, all you get is a shorter and shorter thinking marketing. Unless things are splendid, then they obviously give you the time. But things are not splendid anymore. So for me, the advice is always think about set aside those 25, 35% of the time that you work on a strategy. And support with 50, 60% the ongoing business, because you need the numbers, otherwise you lose the team. Brand is super important. And that says someone who always came from the number side, from the demand generation side. But brand doesn't need to be expensive. We are used to all this YouTube campaigns. There's a lot of things. Brand is fun. Just listen to Roy Sutherland's podcasts and the talks. But I believe there's many ways how you can do brand. Brand is actually everything you do, the market things, maybe even your competition does, that creates your own brand. So you don't need to have the brand campaign. Sometimes some of the easiest ways is, I'm a big fan of storytelling with data. If you have the right service, if you can tell something, even as an underdog, you can basically shape your brands. I think you really have to think about, it's important. You need to be clear what is the outcome. You need to have clear expectation management. The last thing people want is that you tell them, yeah, and in the course of a year, eventually brand awareness will pay. Also be aware, not a lot of people outside of marketing understand brand. However, everyone has an opinion about brand. Everyone knows their favorite brand, and then he comes to you and says, oh, maybe we should do it like Apple does it.
Yes, I've heard that as
So
well.
to me, I think for me, resource allocation is a function of strategy, defining the right strategy. However, it's not the time anymore to completely forego demand. You need to thrive and you need to contribute to the business, otherwise the business is not around in 1 or 3 years anymore.
You've mentioned an interesting point that I would love us to kind of like unfold, if you don't mind, and that's the connection between like CMO and CRO's roles. So we do see a shift in which marketing is drive like is kind of like getting more and more involved into the revenue units. And some CMOs have also they've became or evolved into CROs. You mentioned earlier that you disagree with that format, or that you have like a strong opinion that that's not the right way to go around that. How do you believe that that shift might impact the evolving role of CMOs or like marketing in general?
So let me qualify this. First of all, I would love to see more CROs that evolve from CMOs.
With that, I agree, by the way, but usually they come from sales.
Exactly. So that obviously means that a CMO also at some point needs to have sales experience. Why is it that CROs mainly come from the sales world? Because sellers don't respect people who haven't sold, who can't help them on deals. In the end, closing a deal is more worth than improving awareness by 5%, even if you can afterwards show it basically. But why do I think that a CMO should not report into a CRO? The main reason is that the perspective is completely different. A chief revenue officer typically doesn't understand marketing, probably doesn't even understand, at least I experienced this multiple times, what account-based marketing is a strategy. They often think all they think about, or mostly what they think about, is a lead generation. Oh, I need the leads, and then sales converts them, and that's how my pipeline fills. However, the quiver point, particularly in science as that we have right now, because there is not enough cash, the CEO is under immense pressure to deliver. So the easiest way for him is put part of the pressure onto product, but product is always a long-term strategy. The other part of the pressure goes onto marketing. So what invariably will happen in such a situation, the marketing moves from 60% demand generation to 70% demand generation to 80%. Suddenly it's not even any more demand generation in longer programs. It's what can you do for me next week? And then the entire company breaks apart or falls apart because then the CMO finds himself in such a hamster wheel that he can't even think about strategic initiatives. If I think about some of the biggest impacts that you as a marketer can have, is either you help with positioning, so basically everything what I call product marketing fundamentals, what's the right ICP, what's the buyer journey, what is the buyer personas involved, how can I improve the messaging, where can I find those customers? But you don't get to this point anymore because it's a 3 to 6 month initiative in order to get a screen in line. Instead, you're basically in this hamster wheel. Oh, I found another $500, put them into ad spends, even though you don't believe in it anymore because the conversion rates are not there anymore. But that's what happens. And that's why I think chief revenue officer in charge of driving the business, delivering what's here. CMO in charge of understanding customers, also pushing forward a strategic initiative. I think at the product marketing summit in Toronto, one of the speakers said something interesting. She said, sales is the one to few or one to one. Marketing is always one to N. I think that's how you need to think about it. Doesn't mean for bigger accounts that you don't support sales, but as marketing, you always have to think about how to move the needle at scale. Don't think about the next 2 weeks.
I 100% agree, and I want to ask you a question around how can we also promote or report the work of marketing in the right way. And that has a lot to do also with the right measurement, with the right tracking, but also know what type of data should you present, right? Because in marketing, I think that a lot of what happens is that we have a lot of vanity KPIs, right? Like, I don't know, open rate or things that doesn't, that don't really move the needle. And hence, I think that they get less attention these days. What should we really measure? What could be good KPIs at a high level that the stakeholders might find interest in them?
Revenue. It's as simple.
But then again, we go back to the same discussion. You see, it's kind of like we always want to keep the focus on marketing, but then again, we are tied to the revenue in such a strong bond. Yeah.
I think what's different is the time horizon, but I completely agree. So I once said, no matter how safe a deal is, a seller will always ask for more support. That's the only other entity that I know this way is the corporate counsel. Even if they're 100% sure they're going to win the case, they still ask for more support. I think what's super important is that chief revenue officer and chief marketing officer are best buddies. They need to support a view. They need to be fully behind it, because as soon as someone, one of the sales leaders, casts doubts on what marketing does, the entire sales organization will doubt it. And then the process breaks down. You start with small wins, feeding leads that you're 100% sure. You get a momentum going, but you basically say, hey, we believe and we have agreed that's the right ICP, that's the right qualification criteria. We believe they are good. Please do your work. Revenue attribution is always difficult. You need to get to this, but then not everything can be boiled down. So you need to have a framework where you basically say, okay, how does this boil down into where do I get my my visitors or my traffic ultimately from? What do I need to do for this? So I think it's a complicated transition process. And I find myself all the time in those discussions. How do you explain a content marketer his impact on the numbers? But you can do it. You can basically say, okay, is the material being used? That's an easy way. If you really create content, I've seen both sides. Here's the top 10 things that we need from you. You work them through, and you think you get a thank you, and then it's, oh, here's the next 10 things. And there's always the next things. So I think that's why I really appreciate any tool that enables you to see, is sales using the material, is the customer using the material? If you have the buyer journey, at what stage is it being used, and how is it being used, is really leveraged. And I think that way you can still show a transition. Okay, you say, here's marketing impact. We have created those things that have driven this exposure. They have helped sales to drive the sales cycle. But it's certainly a tough discussion. So I think in the end, the only thing that will be respected at C level is if your chief revenue officer says, yes, we agree, and if you report on revenue.
Yeah, that's a good intake on that. I would love to ask you a bit about attribution models. How do you build that, right? Because I think that also it's very challenging in a way.
I have to watch out because, yes, I also have customers in this space, but I tend to be a bit more cynical, to be honest. So any attribution model will tell you what you want, what you set up with. They give us more clarity, and I think it's important. So at the highest level, what's important is to understand the customer journey. But I've done over the past 15 years multiple tests, be it at Google, be it at other companies. An attribution model always tells you, oh, you need to invest more in paid search.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I'm being a bit more cynical. So yeah. I'm not... I think take them with a grain of salt. I think any attribution for me needs to have a causal chain that I have in my head why things work out this way. Mm-hmm. And often yesterday I had a nice discussion with a US unicorn. And for them, the sales cycle is so long that they actually can't really identify even over the course of 18 months whether an event activity that they had, that it actually resulted in a meaningful return. However, if you have the framework behind it and if you measure interim touch points, it helps you to set this up. So attribution models, I use them in the past. But I was always more on the side and say, okay, what do I need to believe to for the model's results to be true?
Yeah, that's great advice.
It's a dissatisfactory answer. Use them, but don't believe in them.
I think that everything around attribution should be taken with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So should we tap into the topic of AI for a bit? Because that's something that I ask all of my guests in the podcast.
I can't avoid it. So
We can't avoid AI anymore. AI is here for good. How do you believe that AI is, you know, kind of like contributing or complementing the work around go-to-market strategy in marketing? I mean, most people use that for content creation, I assume, and there are multiple AIs that work on content as well. But do you see a way in which we can use AI to a more high-level strategic projects or thinking as marketeers?
I really believe I would actually say I have evolved over time. So when I look at, in the beginning, I looked at the obvious cases that everything is content creation. And I said, the poor content marketers, they will be obsolete. Now, thinking about it, yes, it's never been easier content to create. And I'm 100% convinced that tools like Jasper Copy, you name it, they will get better over time. They will sound more natural. But if you think this through and the ultimate consequence, you're actually back to the SEO content farms of the 2000s. And that strategy didn't work anymore because SEO engines or search engines, they basically realized that's actually not what the customer wants. They don't want to be flooded with lookalike content. So what does this mean? We see already now if you feed pure AI created content into some of the social portals like LinkedIn, hands down, you're getting deprioritized. Those total portals have moved to engagement. And that's, I think, is the right way. This will also happen for SEO. So probably user generated content that is imperfect will have a much, much higher signaling work function than AI-generated content farms. So my prediction is it will be all about user-generated content and community. Of course, you need to do homework, but don't bet overly onto, someone called me chatbot hacking or structured data or whatever. It's my view. So now let's move a level up. I believe as the systems get better, they actually help you. So I'm a huge fan. I am not sure whether you know the company in Berlin, TextCortex.ai.
No, actually,
they,
I haven't heard of
I think
them.
They
I'll
are,
check them.
Pardon?
I haven't heard of them, but I will check them after.
They're pretty good. It's almost like, I would say, a notebook LM on steroids. How did I use this? I basically used all my product marketing knowledge. General one, but also the stuff that I created for myself. Put it in a database, and then you can basically say, okay, I'm working right now with a company that's heavy on digital marketing that has this kind of product. How would you structure for them a launch plan for such and such product? So it won't be 100% sure, but it saves me a lot of time. Or I used it actually for my product marketing lectures here at the University in Munich. I have this problem, or how can I craft me a case study based on this example? How can I teach it to these students? So I believe AI will help us create checklists, structure the process much more efficient. And that way, even someone who is, say, is a junior CMO can deliver outstanding jobs. Just by having a structure, maybe you let your own work challenge. Hey, that's what I have in mind. What do you think? I don't think that they will ever replace the ingenuity of human things. I'm blown away when I see really great brand marketers' ideas. I'm not at all a brand marketer. I know when I see something great and I support this, I don't think AI will do this. But okay. AI will help us to structure the process to improve. They will even come up with their own ideas that no one of us ever thought about, as we see already in research. So I think there is, we are already in the way from moving from the more operational mundane task to more strategic use cases. A lot of it is art. That's why I'm not worried about problems. In fact, I actually believe as AI creeps in, marketing will become more more important in the world. So this is this sounds a bit strange, but if you think about this movement, do 80% of the functionality at 20% of the cost. I think the All In podcast, the Chamath Palihapitiya or whatever. It's true with all the coding, everything, tools, Copilot, whatever, you can create things a lot cheaper. That gives you two ways. So either you create, we are back to the times where you create your own software, or we say we will have off-the-shelf software. But if creation of the product is super cheap and all the products are similarly aligned, before I continue the sentence, think about times when we had this before, like Ford, when he came up with a supply chain. Suddenly, you what did he always say? I build the cheapest cars for the customers that want black cars and should be for Model T. We still have the same thing. Just yesterday, I went to the supermarket. There are 20 different versions of toilet paper, and the price range is from €1 to €5.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about being like the market will be kind of like an... we will all meet the same standard. So kind of like, how do you stand out if all of the products are very similar?
To say, if production of software, of other things, gets so much easier that everything is similar, then you need to think. And how did Ford break down? Because Alfred Sloan came, created a General Motors company platform strategy, and suddenly recognized, as long as you do the core correct, you have an option to market 10 different brands. That's also the difference in differentiation with the toilet paper. There's the things that I don't even use, and then there's the normal hardcore paper or whatever. But in the end, it's marketing. So I believe in this world of AI, marketing will actually be super important, and those CMOs will be best positioned to benefit from it, do it, deeply understand product marketing, so positioning, that understand how to transition this brand into, this positioning into create brand, and how to execute on it. But in the end, the differentiator in the future beyond the core product will be the things that can't be easily automated with the AI. So service, brand perception, positioning, and so on.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree, and I want also to add something on top of it, if I may. What I find really interesting is the whole experience and emotion that is happening with the customers, that I feel as if that, you know, like with the rise of AI, we will also see a rise in the need to understand that, you know, because if all the copywriting is kind of like at the same level of standard, we all sound the same also on LinkedIn, which by the way, I hate, especially as a non-native. I mean, like we write in different style because we come from different backgrounds, and that should have a space. I mean, that is my core belief. And that's kind of like now I see everyone has a super polished English, which is simply not true. And that's fine because we are all different. But I find it's very interesting that we will also need to consider more the emotional side. Like what type of emotions do we raise when we create this content or that brand, et cetera, et cetera. So that is just my take over there.
I'm your student. It's a great comment.
Super. So Norm, we have reached the end of the interview. So I would say thank you very much for being my guest, and yeah, I will wish you a lovely day.
Thanks so much, and see you soon in Berlin.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of CMO Combo. For more content like this, check the recommended videos on your screen now. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a thing.